we are about halfway through this reshuffling of the NBA season, right? There was 8 games when you came back, and kind of this quick everybody get into playing shape, get ready to what the seedings will be, and get ready for NBA basketball. We had some great games last night, including James Harden making it happen.
Harden pulls back, shoots for 3, cans it, back-to-back threes! And number 13 puts the Rockets back up 13. With 5:47 to go, he's got 37. Timeout LA, 8 straight for the Rockets, 102-89.
They go on to win 113-97 over the LeBron-less Lakers. That call courtesy of KBME 790. Again, a couple different ways to look at this game for the Rockets last night. 3-1 in the bubble. Of course, you look at that. 21 three-pointers for the Rockets, which is traditionally what just the Rockets do. But on the flip side of it, a couple things. Without LeBron, obviously the Lakers were going to struggle scoring. But even with LeBron being in this lineup, it almost looks like they're disinterested to a certain extent. Now, minus, obviously, no J.R. Smith right now. They're trying to get Deion Waiters back involved, Rajon Rondo. They don't have all the pieces, and they're already locked in as a number one seed, but they're still trying to figure out their identity right now. Meanwhile, on the other side, Harden just doing Harden things. 39 points, 12 assists, and he's been fantastic even the games without Russell Westbrook yesterday. Now, the other team that's been looking fantastic is the number one seed over in the East. That is the Milwaukee Bucks.
Under 10 seconds to play. Miami is not going to foul. This one is in the bank. It is earning interest. What a comeback today. 23-point hole in the second quarter, 17 at the half. And the final score today, Bucks 130, Miami 116.
That call courtesy of WTMJ, and when they flipped the switch, the Bucks flipped the switch as good as anybody. They were trailing the Heat by as many as 23 points. They go on to cover. They end up winning by 14. Of course, that clinches the top seed over in the East. Second straight season that the Bucks have had the top seed, and they had never done it previously in the format since 1983-84, but a fantastic job by Giannis and everyone, down 17. And again, they had 2 different 20-5 runs that just made a huge difference for them. But I thought this was the best highlight of the night, courtesy of Rip City Radio 620.
So here's the inbound from Simons. He gives it to Dame with Craig pressuring it. Pushes it across the timeline. Pulls up, gets the foul call, and count the 3! A 4-point opportunity for Damian Lillard.
Lillard, 45 points, 12 assists, tying his own franchise record, 11 threes. Just incredible. In fact, and he tied James Harden, who did it back in 2019, as the only players in NBA history with 10 threes and 10 assists in the game. And the Blazers right now, this is what Dame Lillard was talking about. There was a lot of questions about, all right, how many teams do you bring back into the bubble? Because remember, the Blazers dealt with a bunch of injuries early in the year, and had they just brought quote-unquote playoff teams, the Blazers would not have been that team. In fact, they're not even in the 8 seed right now. They're kind of just hovering around in that little constipated group of the playoffs in the Western Conference, trying to figure out that 8-9 seeding area. But Dame, CJ Lillard, all of those guys are starting to mesh at just the right time. Now, here's the deal. If the Blazers get in, are they a legit threat to the Lakers? Dominic Foxworth, Richard Jefferson, and Matt Barnes were talking about this earlier on First Take.
Their defense is obviously going to be a problem, but they're a threat to the Lakers only because the Lakers had Avery Bradley opt out and Rondo is still coming back off that injury. They don't really have anybody to defend a guy like Dame Lillard. Not that there is anybody who can defend Dame Lillard in the league, but they have no one on that roster that can slow them down. And I think that the Blazers' defense is not great, but they have big bodies and Collins and Nurk who can potentially not slow down AD, but at least guard him reasonably well. And I think if Dame Lillard and McCollum and even Gary Trent Jr., who's playing incredibly well while he's been in the bubble, if those guys can continue to shoot the way that they've been shooting, I think that they could be a problem for the Lakers, but I'd still obviously go with the number one overall seed, the team with AD and LeBron on them.
Dame Lillard, before this season stopped, was having one of the best seasons. like one of the best seasons of his career. His numbers, his shooting, he was so locked in. And that is a nightmare for the Lakers. Ultimately, when you, like you said, when you lose Avery Bradley, who is a defender, and they tried to bring in guys like J.R. Smith, they bring in Dion Waiters, hopefully these guys can give you some spot minutes defensively. But ultimately, they have no one to guard Dame Lillard. They really have no one to guard C.J. McCollum. And you could say Bron and A.D., but like you said, Nurkic, you could see he's healthy, he's back, he's focused. And Matt was on a team that was a one seed, or that was an eight seed that beat a one seed. I was on a team that was a one seed and lost to an eight seed. So when I tell you that the threat is real, the threat is extremely real.
No, I agree. I definitely feel like the threat is real. Everything is about timing. It's not necessarily about the records of the past. The Lakers are the number one seed, but right now it's about who's the hottest team in the bubble going into the playoffs. Portland is one of them. Dame's playing great. I still think not having Trevor Ariza in these playoffs, if Portland is fortunate enough to make the playoffs, is going to hurt. But like everything everyone else mentioned, you know, they have no match for Dame. They have no match for CJ. Nurk is playing like a, you know, like he's been hurt and is excited to play now. Carmelo, Gary Trent, they're a very solid team. I don't know if they're deep enough, but they're definitely going to be a threat. But I would still have to pick the Lakers in the first round.
Yeah, the Lakers haven't been – they've been one of the teams that we've watched in the bubble so far that haven't looked all that good. And I think there's reasons why. You could suggest that maybe they don't care as much because they have the number one locked up. And also home court advantage doesn't really matter because it's not a real thing in the playoffs. But we haven't seen the best of the Lakers since we're in the bubble. And it could just be that maybe they aren't comfortable. They haven't gotten back into the gist of things, and it could be a tough matchup for them. But closing games is always something that I hear from basketball analysts, how important it is to be able to close games, and I think that's the difference between a lot of teams, but that is not a deficit that the Blazers have. I think Dame Lillard is the name we keep saying, and we're going to keep saying, is maybe the best player in this league in closing games. And you can think back to those two playoff game winners that he hit that everyone forgets, where he had that ice grill at the end of the game. Was it last year in the playoffs? That was incredible. You know that he's a guy that can close games and you feel comfortable with, but I do think that the issues on the defensive side of the ball, even though the Lakers aren't scoring very well right now, the issues on the defensive side of the ball for the Blazers is going to be what holds them back in the long run from knocking off the Lakers or making a deep run into the playoffs. Because I know you brought up Melo, and I love Melo. He's from Baltimore, where I'm from. I root for him. I want him to play well. But at first, I thought he was a great fit for this team, but it's tough when you have guards like Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum, who are wing players who don't necessarily have a great defensive acumen. You add a guy like Melo, who is a similar guy, who's an ISO scorer, who is not going to be a great wing defender, and that team wasn't great on defense before they added him. They're not going to get any better. So I don't know how he fits into this team going forward into the playoffs, but I'm certainly rooting for him. But I don't think any of us, as much as we like the Blazers, any of us think that they're actually going to be this team to knock off LeBron and AD, even though they aren't playing well right now.
I think Melo fits fine.
You think not? Yeah.
Go ahead. I think Melo fits fine in what they have going on. I think, like I said, I think the key factor who they're missing is Trevor Ariza. He's a 3-and-D guy, experienced, someone who can guard Bron, someone who can guard the Lakers' wings. No one in the world can guard AD, and no one can really guard Bron, but I think Trevor was someone who can definitely slow and agitate Bron. But yeah, they don't really have – Portland doesn't have too much defense on the wings, and you're definitely going to need that in the playoffs period, but definitely to advance in the playoffs.
I'm looking forward to it. If that's the matchup we want to see, I'm all for it. If we can get Dame Lillard, who's been an absolute just standout here in the bubble, and now with C.J. McCollum, they're healthy. Carmelo Anthony is going to give you some good numbers. Gary Trent Jr. I mean, there is enough right now that's happening. And now, remember, when Avery Bradley decided that he was not going to play in the bubble, that hurt the Lakers and what they were going to have to deal with in as far as defending the perimeter right now. Remember, last thing on this, too, Lakers and Blazers met earlier this year, and it ended up being Blazers won that game. Remember that game? Was there in LA. Now, it was on January 30th, and I believe that was the first game back for the Lakers at home after the passing of Kobe Bryant. Remember, both teams came up, and LeBron gave a very emotional speech, so there was a lot of factors in that game. But in that game itself, Dame Lillard, 48 points. Hassan Whiteside scored 30. McCollum was fantastic as well. So telling me if that's a 1-8 matchup I'm going to get, that is infinitely better than I would ever thought at the start of this season. Remember, NBA is on ESPN Radio. Tune in tonight. Tatum and the Celtics visit the Raptors, presented by Indeed. Coverage begins at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on most ESPN radio stations. Peter Burns in here on First Take, Your Take, Jason Fitz. Obviously, big news throughout college football, and it continues to be updating, it seems, moment by moment and tweet by tweet. To help me break down what's going on, my cohort over on SiriusXM Radio and my brother over there on SEC Network, Chris Doering, former Florida Gator great, on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. CD, we saw big news yesterday, as now we're up to, I believe, 23 different college football players have decided to opt out of the upcoming college football season, including some stars like Caleb Farley from Virginia Tech, star cornerback, and now we saw Rondell Moore, who was electric at Purdue. How much more of these players and big-time names do you expect to see say, nah, I'm good this season?
Well, I'll be honest with you, PB. I was shocked with the flurry of players in the NFL that decided to opt out, guys that were leaving quite a bit of money on the table. And I guess naively, I was going into, you know, this college football season thinking that there would not be a lot of guys that would follow suit, that folks would want to play. A lot of people trying to show their wares and help promote themselves to the NFL scouts. But, you know, to have as many as we've had already, I guess I shouldn't be surprised on it. But I think, you know, I've put myself in that position going back to when I was playing in college. I could never have imagined missing a rep in practice, let alone missing an entire season. So it is interesting. You know, I thought if there was anybody that would be missing a season this year, it would have been the guys that are projected to go this year early in the NFL draft, guys like Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Jamar Chase. But we haven't heard anything from those guys. In fact, Jamar Chase's father confirmed that he wants to play this season. So I am a little confused at why some of these guys are choosing to go that route, especially not being the most highly rated guys coming out this year. But at the same time, I respect their concern over their safety and trying to do what's best for them.
It's interesting, as Chris Doering is joining us here on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line with Peter Burns here on First Take, Your Take. We're talking about safety, and that's at the foremost of college football and the administrators right now. How can you safely have a season? CD, we saw the Pac-12 put their Players United statement out on Players Tribune. Of course, the Big Ten did it as well. But the Big Ten had a different look at it and different proposal than the Pac-12, and it mm-hmm. seemed to be a little bit more COVID-19 and health-related. Was that the big difference of why the Big Ten's statement was received so much better than the Pac-12's?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right about that. The Big Ten players learn from the faults of the Pac-12 players. And it's not that the Pac-12 players did anything wrong, but what they did was they dispersed their effectiveness by covering so many broad topics. You know, I think as they talked about COVID safety and precautions as they returned to campus and playing this season, I think we're all behind that. When they talked about promoting racial justice, I think we were all behind that. And then they threw in the part about pay-for-play, which is a very controversial subject amongst amateur athletics, college football particularly. And then I think they lost a lot of people. So I think if they would have remained a little bit focused, it would have been more better received by the public. And I think that's where the Big Ten players did a better job of focusing in the here and now, knowing that that's the most immediate thing to be dealt with. And I think everybody can get behind the idea of, hey, we all want football, but we want it done safely. We want it done with a lot of thought and planning. And I think that's where the Big Ten players may have hit more of a home run, learning from the mistakes of the folks that went in front of them there from the Pac-12.
It is interesting, too, CD, as more people have opted out. We saw this with Chandler Wooten, one of the Auburn football players. Immediately, Gus Malzahn retweeted his statement and said, hey, we support this. This is how this process is going to be work. And I kind of feel like there's been a lot of people that don't follow college football very closely that have kind of parachuted in on this topic and go, well, it's just college athletics and administrators just, you know, making millions of dollars off these kids, and they don't care about the safety of it. Do you think that's a fair representation of what's happening in college sports right now?
Well, I think that's certainly an interpretation. I don't think it's a fair representation. I mean, I've talked about this with you before in the past. I think the pendulum has swung a little bit the other way, where there's very little gratitude and appreciation for what playing college football, what getting a scholarship to one of these prestigious universities really means for you for the future of your life. I mean, I've talked about this a lot. I walked on originally. My first 2 years of school, I had to pay for my own way. I was put on scholarship by Coach Spurrier right before my sophomore year. finished up. I got a degree in the College of Journalism from the University of Florida. I got a chance to have a great career at Florida that not only gave me an opportunity to play in the NFL, but created a name amongst the Gator fan base. And so subsequently, in my post-playing days, I've got a job with the SEC Network on ESPN. I've got a job with SiriusXM, both that I give a lot of credit to that from playing football at Florida and from the degree I got in the College of Journalism. And then also my name, reputation, and what I've been able to create with my mortgage company that I own in the Gainesville area. So there is a lot of lack of gratitude going on. I think there's a lot of entitlement amongst players right now and too much focus on getting to the NFL. It's a great goal to have. I loved my years in the NFL, but I can tell you I make more money every year now with the things that I'm doing than I ever did in any year in the NFL. And I can do that for the rest of my life, where the NFL is just a very short period of time. So I think the players need to understand there is value. There's certainly inequities with what's going on with the money that's being made by college football and the coaches that are getting paid and the schools. But at the same time, there needs to be more appreciation and less entitlement on the players' behalf from what they're able to get out of the situation as well.
With that being said, Chris Doering joining Peter Burns here on First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio. Doering, does this mean, like, when the Pac-12 players asked for 50% of the revenues, we all kind of laughed at that and that was a pie in the sky thing, but do you feel like that helped the bargaining of this name, image, and likeness that's pretty much being negotiated in front of Congress right now? Do you think that did anything to move it closer to the goal line or nothing at all?
I don't know if it moved it closer to the goal line. I think we can all, as fans, get behind the idea of players taking advantage of their name, image, and likeness. I mean, in society today, there's so many people that are able to capitalize on the followers they have on social media or things that they're able to put out on YouTube. Like, I think it's fair for players to get paid money off of jersey sales from the reputation that they've created as players at a particular university. Those are things that I think we can all get behind. But the idea of paying for play is something that I think that we're all, a lot of us are very resistant to. Again, having played college football, having played in the NFL, I think you start getting into the situation where we're paying players to play football. We lose a little bit of the specialness of playing college football, you know, kind of mending the athletics with the academics. And I think there's ways to monetize the situation without having to outright pay the players. And I think the name, image, and likeness thing is already on track to be put into application here in the next year or so. So I don't want to muddy the waters with this idea of, hey, now we're entitled to 50% of the revenue. That's just ridiculous. As a business owner, that's not going to happen in any entity, and certainly that's not going to happen in college football.
It is interesting, had the NCAA had the foresight to do and grant name likeness and image, or name, image, likeness, however you want to call it, a couple years ago, how would the season be viewed at right now, as opposed to when the kids don't have that right to make a couple extra bucks and then, quote-unquote, the PR of it is, oh, they're being forced to play, which is clearly not the case. You can follow him on Twitter, at Chris Doering. CD, I appreciate the time, man.
Yeah, great being with you, PB. Thanks.
All right, ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Quoting home insurance just got easier with Progressive Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. Coming up, the NFL's deadline to opt out of the season was yesterday. We'll talk about that coming up next. Welcome back, First Take, Your Take. No Jason Fitz today. Hanging out with me, Peter Burns. You can follow us or follow myself on Twitter at Peter Burns ESPN. ESPN Radio is always presented by Progressive Insurance. And don't forget to listen to ESPN Audio at Home via your smart speaker. ESPN Audio at Home is fantastic and brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. Drive a Mercedes-Benz Vans. Find out how far an extra mile really goes. From customization to service to financial assistance, Mercedes-Benz Vans are ready for anything. This man is always ready for anything, especially when it's NFL related. Joining us on the show, Pinzor Performance Line, our NFL insider, Jeff Darlington. Jeff, are you at least excited that you don't have to live and die by your cell phone right now because of just waiting to see which NFL players have decided to opt out, as the deadline was yesterday?
Yeah. I mean, I guess we did get some clarity there. It's funny because, like, I started to think about it, and it was, you know, it was quite a number of players. I think like 85, I think Mort counted. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's a significant number of players. But then you think about how many guys get, like, hurt in training camp. It's probably not that different, you know? Like, teams do wind up losing players This obviously is a unique circumstance, but I think that teams generally will, you know, I think they'll be okay.
Jeff, you put something, it was up on ESPN.com, and it was talking about how, you know, you're respecting the players' decisions or whether or not to play. I mean, how much of that, when you talk to the front offices, I mean, we saw obviously a ton of different Patriot players decide to do it. I would imagine, is it truly one of those things where the owners are going to say, yes, absolutely, we 100% understand, or do you think there's a level of disappointment that they'll never actually communicate with some of the players deciding that this is not going to be the year for them?
No, I don't want to speak for the owners, but I do sense that most people in the league have been pretty understanding about this. Even Tre'Davious White, you know, he was the one who was really exploring the possibility of opting out, and he's also the one who had said that he faced a lot of social media backlash for even considering it. But I was talking to a Bills source a couple days ago, kind of just asking, what do you sense on Tre'Davious? Is he going to play or not? And he was like, I don't know, it's up to him. Like, even for as significant of a player as that, it wasn't like, you better play, you know? Like, I sensed organizationally that teams are being generally supportive of this and understanding that everybody kind of has pretty unique circumstances. Like, it's not like these guys are, like, you know, duping the organization. Like, they're sure. The ones who are actually making the ultimate sacrifice for, you know, a tough decision. So I think teams generally have been pretty understanding so far.
Let's talk about the actual NFL play, right? I feel like nothing that you and I and everyone, especially in the college football world, we talked all of these hypotheticals and who's going to play. We haven't really talked much about the season, but let's tie the two together here, Jeff. And which teams were maybe affected the most? Is it as simple as the Patriots because of the sheer amount of players, or what teams were really affected by this?
You know, I actually think that it's more the teams with, for instance, like the rookie quarterbacks and the young coaches. So like the Bengals, for instance, Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow, both guys really trying to still get their legs in terms of the NFL. That's the type of team to me that will be at kind of the biggest disadvantage. The Patriots will figure it out. And of the, I think, eight players that opted out, you know, Dante Hightower, there's like three pretty solid players, but again, I go back to the idea that like the Patriots have always been the ultimate next man up squad. You know, when it comes to injuries, how many times in a training camp were we like, man, that guy just went down with a torn ACL. What a bummer. And the team figures out a way to kind of soldier through it. So I don't think the opt-outs will impact him nearly as much as the lack of an off season for some of these young players.
And that's where my next question was. Jeff Darlington joining us in the Shell Pinsar Performance Line. Peter Burns here on First Take. Your take is, I can't wait to see Joe Burrow on the next level. Tua Tagovailoa, all these fantastic guys that we saw just absolute dominate college football. What's the learning curve like for them in a really unprecedented training camp that's going to look a whole lot different than traditional rookie camp for these guys?
Right. So I go back and forth on this. Like, I was just kind of making the point that, you know, it's a situation where Joe Burrow, for instance, won't have the greatest advantage. But then, like, then I think about, like, I keep coming back to, for some reason, the training camp when Russell Wilson came into the league, and Matt Flynn was the just signed, like, a deal for, like, $8 million a year.
That was when he had the six-touchdown game, right? Little did you know. Do you know who called the first half of that game for the Packers?
Was it you?
I would have loved it if it had been me. I would have been a lot more richer than doing ESPN radio. But it was Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers actually called. Yes, because so I knew Matt Flynn, former LSU Tiger, and that's how I knew him. And I said, so give me the background story of how that, you know, the infamous six-touchdown game where Aaron was sitting down. And he goes, you know who called the plays? I go, who? And he goes, Aaron.
Oh,
Aaron went to the Packers and said, hey, give me the headset. Let me call the plays for Flynn. And sure enough, made him a boatload of money. So Matt Flynn thinks Aaron Rodgers is the greatest offensive coordinator ever. But I give the floor back to you, you know.
No, that's great. And no, my point to that point is that Flynn came into the next year, kind of we thought he was going to be the starter. And here comes Russell Wilson in like 2 weeks. Everybody's like, oh, no, Russell Wilson, he's the guy. It's not even a question. So, like, to a degree, yes, I do think preparation matters. But there's also something about these special quarterbacks the second you see him. Even when Patrick Mahomes was behind Alex Smith, like, there was no question in anybody's mind. So if a guy is special, I think generally he flashes pretty quick, regardless of the preparation. So I really do go back and forth on whether or not, I think it will have an impact on some of these guys, but there's some guys who will just kind of overextend beyond it.
What are you excited about? I feel like nothing in everything we do in Sports Talk Radio has been so negative headline driven. And Jeff, you're always a positive guy. Like, what's the storyline that we feel like we've been robbed that we haven't had a chance to embrace during this whole pandemic?
Well, so, I mean, I think that people are going to be sick of my answer, but I am really interested in the Tom Brady with the Bucks. I'm sorry. I can't get over it. Like, I'm really, that would be the one thing, if this season were lost because of COVID, that I would be really bummed that we didn't get a chance to see. Because I actually think it's among the most fascinating kind of chapters that we've seen in the NFL. And I know people are probably pretty tired of Tom and the whole thing, but I cannot not be fascinated by the prospect of a 42-year-old guy starting with a new team in a new place after 20 years in another place and seeing what he can do.
Well, I mean, Jeff, I was there in Denver when Peyton Manning, when John Elway signed Manning, and it was, I mean, again, three-ring circus. There were helicopters flying around about where he was going to go, and every single play, every single snap was looked at as like the Zapruder film on, hey, what's his success going to be? And it's fascinating. And ultimately, the Broncos had a ton of success. The Colts, not so much, but that was because of Andrew Luck ended up getting hurt. Mm-hmm. If you're willing to put your $7.3 million Jeff Darlington salary on the line now.
Yeah.
You taking Bucks or you taking Patriots with the more successful 2020? Now knowing all the Patriots players have been opting out.
Well, even beyond that, I take the Bucks from the standpoint that, like, I understand the challenge that they face, but look, Tom even thought that the cupboard was bare in New England. That was part of the reason why he was okay. He wanted to leave was because he was basically saying, all right, what are we going to do to make this better than last year? Because that roster was just not good enough. And he didn't really get much of an answer there. So as much as I think everybody kind of subscribes to the whole, oh, Belichick will figure it out, I actually don't agree. I don't think, I mean, I'm not saying that he'll still overcoach his players. He'll do a great job with what he's doing. But I think that, I just don't think it's going to be nearly as easy as we often expect it to be without Tom Brady quite frankly, with a team that is more devoid of talent than they've been in probably the past two decades.
And yet they always tried, and they always, I was going to say try, they always pretty much figure it out. Last question here for Jeff Darlington here with Peter Burns on First Take, your take of Jason Fitz. If I said, Jeff, you're only allowed to cover one division in the NFL next year, you can't really talk about any of the other teams, you're going to be quarantined with these four teams, which division are you taking?
You're really going to make me ride this Tom Brady thing to the end.
No, are you going to take that? You're taking NFC South? I mean, I get it. With the Saints and Breeze and Falcons.
Yes. Are you kidding me?
How are you not taking NFC West, though? I mean,
That's fine. It's a great division. It's great football. Yeah, I get it. I'm with you. It's fun football, but it's not as fascinating as what we're looking at with the Saints and the Bucks. Like, that is two teams that they're going to play each other twice with Hall of Fame, some of the greatest of all time, and they're going to duke it out at this stage in their careers. Like, that's amazing. One of those teams, the Bucks or the Saints, one of those teams will have to make the playoffs through a wild card. Like, that's pretty awesome. And I know I agree, actually, with the NFC West, because it's crazy to think that if you're going to make the playoffs in the NFC, that means you have to be better than considering the wild card situation, you've got to, out of the gates, be better than either the Saints, the Bucks, the 49ers, the Seahawks, and the Rams. If you're not better than one of those teams, you're not making the playoffs this year unless you win the division. That's a crazy wild card race in the NFC this year.
And it's going to be fascinating, and fingers crossed we're able to watch that on the football field.
Thanks for making me seem like the total Tom Brady homer, by the way.
The president of the TB12 fan club, Jeff Darlington, joining us here. Also, moonlights at ESPN NFL Insider. Jeff, always great stuff, man. You've been killing it this offseason. We appreciate the time.
Appreciate it. Now I got to go hydrate and do some pliability exercises.
Hey, if you can do it as well as he does at the age of whatever, 63 is Brady, you'll be in good shape.
I did not.
There it is. Jeff Darlington joining us here. And remember, that was brought to you by Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. You can hit me up on Twitter at Peter Burns ESPN. I do want to ask that question. If you're only allowed to follow one division, okay, and you get to make that pick, which one you picking? I think it's simple. I think it's NFC West with the different storylines. As much as I want to say Tom Brady, but Jeff Darlington is a whole lot smarter than me, especially when it comes to the NFL. So what say you? Hit us up on Twitter at Peter Burns ESPN, or you can give us a phone call, 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. All right, coming up, the best non-offensive player who's not a QB. Christian McCaffrey thinks he knows exactly who it is and knows him well. We'll talk about that next. It's First Take Your Take with Peter Burns on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. First Take Your Take, Jason Fitz, ESPN Radio. As you can hear from the voice and probably the talent level, I am not Jason Fitz. I am just Peter Burns. This show is always presented by Progressive Insurance. You can hit me up on Twitter at Peter Burns ESPN. Remember, ESPN Radio, Progressive Insurance is our sponsor, and insurance for motorcycles, boats, and RVs for protection on the road and on the water. See how much you can save in as little as 3 minutes on 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Hit me up on Twitter. We were just having the conversation with Jeff Darlington about the most exciting players and the most exciting division in all of the NFL. And you mean to tell me if I got to quarantine myself with four different teams, right? Just one division in the NFL. Frankly, I'm taking the NFC West. As much as I love the Tom Brady headline, I love everything that's happening in the NFC West between, you know, the Rams, the 49ers, the Cardinals and Kyler Murray, and now Hopkins is going to be on that team, and then Seattle gets Jamal Adams. That's going to be fantastic to watch. But I will say that the NFC South is going to be intriguing. One of the guys that's here in Charlotte, where I'm at right now, is Christian McCaffrey. And the question was brought up on First Take today, is he the best non-quarterback offensive player in the NFL? Dominic Foxworth said, yeah.
I mean, I think he's right if you're talking about fantasy. So, yeah, he's the best player to draft for fantasy, but he's not the first player I would draft if I was trying to build an NFL champion team or a top-ranked offense. And maybe it's the defensive back in me showing what scares me and what I believe scares defenses and what compromises defense more than anything is a big play threat. So deep ball receivers are the ones who would terrify me. And Tyreek Hill, Julio Jones, those are the guys who do that, who break defenses that require multiple defensive backs to look over there and the attention of multiple defensive backs over on that side of the ball that frees up the running game. And and they still make big plays. I remember in the Super Bowl that the Falcons lost to the Patriots, who they doubled Julio all game, and he was still catching the ball. And as good as Christian McCaffrey is, I don't think there's that one. Oh, they had a safety behind him right there. I remember that play. And as good as Christian McCaffrey is, I don't think he has the same impact of a type of receiver like Tyreek Hill or Julio Jones, and that they just break the defense. They'll give you 50, 60-yard touchdowns, and when they're not doing that, they're gobbling up 3 and 4 defenders because that's how many you need to stop them. And I think that opens up the offense for so many other players, more so than I think a running back, as dynamic as Christian McCaffrey is as a receiver and a running back in modern football. I think that the big play receiver, in my mind, is a little scarier and more valuable.
I agree with that to a certain extent, right? Because we have become a passing league. The NFL wanted to have a little bit more pizzazz, and we saw that. I mean, hell, look at the numbers that Michael Thomas has put up over for the Saints. If you look at the numbers that Hopkins had when the Texans were having success, I get it. Even Jones in his illustrious career with Matt Ryan for the Atlanta Falcons. But it's not even close right now. Because you have a Swiss Army knife in Christian McCaffrey, right? You know, Snoopy used to have the song, 6 Million Ways to Die, Choose One. I feel like that's the football equivalent of Christian McCaffrey. It's like, how do you want to guard him right now? You want a linebacker? Well, he's going to beat you. You're going to have a safety come up? Well, then all of a sudden, that's going to help your wide receivers. Oh, by the way, you just want him to run the rock? That he can do it. Because he's unlike any other running back in the league right now. I mean, you go through, remember, the NFL Network just had their big list of, you know, the best players throughout this upcoming season. Derrick Henry was the top running back not named Christian McCaffrey, right? And Derrick Henry is so much different of a running back. You got to go way down the line as far as as much as I like Dalvin Cook, I think the only close player to that might end up being Zeke Elliott. With the way that Zeke and Dak Prescott can cause some matchup issues, I think Zeke could be that way. But when it comes down to it, if you're telling me I got the first pick of a fantasy football draft, no way in hell I'm not taking Christian McCaffrey. But on the other side, I'm taking him maybe to start my franchise. All right, coming up, monster news out of Major League Baseball. Not looking good for the Cardinals. We'll talk about that next. First Take, your take. Peter Burns on ESPN Radio.